So thank you, everybody, for coming today. I'm Alex Thier of the U.S. Institute of Peace, and this is another session of our Afghanistan Working Group for the special phase that we're in, which we are calling the Future of Afghanistan Project, which is really trying to look ahead beyond the next 12 to 18 months, I'm sure, as most of you tend to see. Not only in the press, but even in reports that come out from think tanks and so on, we tend to be extremely focused on Afghanistan over the next 12 to 18 months. And I think since 2002, every year has been the critical year for Afghanistan. So for the seventh year running, this is the critical year for Afghanistan. And I say that in part because obviously it is a critical year, and this year has seen in particular a lot of problems which have caused grave concern in Kabul around Afghanistan as well as in Washington. But at the same time, I think unless we think more broadly and over the long term about where Afghanistan is and where it may be going, then we're not going to get there, certainly not if we think in 12-month strategies. And so it is a pleasure to have with us today one of the people in the Afghan government who I think in many ways has been asked to lead the drive for Afghanistan's government into the future. Mr. Jilani Popal, and unfortunately the biography I have here is a little bit thin, so I apologize for that. Having recently served as the Deputy Minister of Finance in a period where, amongst other things going on in Afghanistan, Afghanistan has seen around 10% growth for the last several years, and so there are some things that have been positive about what's been happening in Afghanistan on the economic front. I think in part because of that success, Mr. Popal was tapped to take on really a unique function in some ways in Afghan history. The Independent Directorate for Local Governance was established. And as many of you know, Afghanistan has a central government. And the Ministry of Interior, unlike our own, which looks after trees and streams, the Ministry of the Interior is really the hub of government in Afghanistan and has been for decades and decades. That was the ministry that was essentially responsible for managing the provinces, the provincial governments. The governors reported to the Minister of Interior. And I think that particularly in the last several years, there's been a realization amongst the Afghan government and members of the international community that standing up governance, not only in Kabul, but particularly out in the provinces and districts and villages of Afghanistan, was really the preeminent challenge for Afghanistan. Ultimately, everything that we're doing in Afghanistan lives or dies by the ability to establish a capable, credible, and legitimate government. And that doesn't mean Kabul. For most people, that means what happens at the local level. It means who determines how the water is distributed. It means who builds a road. It means who resolves a dispute about property boundaries. And of course, it means what you do when things go wrong, about going to the police. And these are the issues that affect most Afghans. I was interested to see in something that the IDLG wrote recently that 50% of Afghans live in villages with a population of 300 people or less. So most Afghans are living lives not in cities or even in towns, but in small village environments where they essentially know everybody. And it really tells you a lot about what life is like for most Afghans. So the IDLG was stood up in order to think about how to deal with the question of, in Wonk speak, subnational governance in Afghanistan. Everything outside of Kabul, which unfortunately is largely what we focused on for the first 4 or 5 years. So with that introduction, they have just released on the 10th of September a draft strategy for subnational governance, which makes very interesting reading. And I think it's a project that really is one of the most important for the future of Afghanistan and for the future certainly of the United States in Afghanistan. So without further ado, we will turn it over to Mr. Popal to introduce this work and to give us some food for thought, and then we will open it up for discussion. So thank you and welcome.
Thank you very much, and it's a matter of great pleasure and honor for me to come and discuss with you some of the governance issues in Afghanistan. It's especially relating to the sustained peace and stability in Afghanistan. And thank you very much for inviting me, and I know that most of you are academics and very experts in this field. At least I know two of my previous colleagues in Penn that they're very well experienced and well knowledgeable about Afghanistan. And but just to introduce the subjects, and I will leave mainly to you for to have a live and a good discussion later, but I will be very brief discussing two things. First, our vulnerability to the peace and conflict of Afghanistan. We're vulnerable to this. I will mention some areas which already you know about that. But and also that those elements and the positive trends which is going in favor of peace in Afghanistan, which we have to strengthen those areas. And I will mention the role of IDLG, the Independent Director of Local Governance, and building peace in Afghanistan, building sustainable peace in Afghanistan. I will mention briefly about that. You know about our, we are vulnerable to the conflicts because first, the one of the early signs of the conflicts is absolute poverty in Afghanistan. Absolute poverty is an early sign that will make us vulnerable to the conflict. And the second thing that is the multi-ethnic composition of the country, which this multi-ethnic combinations is somehow exploited by our neighboring countries, which they have some kind of affiliations and connection with these different tribes. If it is Pashtuns, Tajiks, Uzbeks, or Hazaras, that also that because of the regional competition and the regional, the country neighboring, hostile neighboring countries' interests, that's make us very vulnerable to the conflict in Afghanistan. The third is that the existence of a weapon, small weapon, is the most dangerous things that which exist in Afghanistan. Even that now that through the DDR program and the IAC program, we collected most of the heavy weapons, but the small existence of small weapons, which again, especially used widely in the civil conflicts in around the world and also in Afghanistan, make us very vulnerable to in regional competitions of the countries, like the conflicts between India and Pakistan has a direct impact on us, especially the countries like and some of neighboring countries, they use the extremism. The countries which is created because of the hatreds, religious hatreds, they are using the religious extremism in hatreds as a tool of foreign policy, as a tool for their existence in protecting their national interests, which caused us and cost us a lot and create a lot of division in Afghan society and cause of a lot of security problem. That also that large number of unemployment is the one of the other areas that make us very vulnerable to the peace in the country. And especially the composition of the population, which is 60% of our population is below 25 years old. So there's a lot of young generations unemployed. They're working to find some employment. These are the trends which is going against the peace and stability in Afghanistan. But also, we have positive trends that, well, if we, these trends are strengthened and supported, that can contribute to the lasting peace in Afghanistan. The first way I mentioned about the ethnic composition of the country, but the good news is these tribes and these ethnic groups always lived in peace and harmony together. There's no history of genocide in Afghanistan. They're, during the history, they're bind together, and even despite all the efforts of the neighboring countries to create divisions, they were not able to disintegrate the country or create a great division, that unrepairable division between, like they did in Europe and other countries. The good thing is that all these tribes participated in the and especially during the history, participated in the political and economic and the social life of the country. The king usually were mainly from 1776. The kings were mainly from Pashtun areas, but his court was very diversified, because not intentionally he diversified the court, because he wanted to get the participation of all the ethnic groups, but it's for tools for his survival. Because the first danger the king was facing was from his family, cousins, and tribes. For the kings to last long, he should diversify the king and bring in all the different. That also ensured the participation of all the different ethnic groups in the government, and also in the political and social life of the country. That is, there's no caste system in Afghanistan. This is a low caste or upper caste. People are treated equal, and they share the same religion and same pride, and they feel this part of the society. Also, that now we are emerging in the post-conflict situation, that we are very fortunate that we have a very strong international commitment that will, if you exploit this situation, these opportunities efficiently and effectively, that will be built Afghanistan, and we will save from all those hostile neighboring environment we have, and we will have a space to build our society, fragmented society, because it's fragmented because of the 30 years of war, and put peace together back. And our army is emerging as a very professional army, that this army is winning the admiration of the ordinary citizens. That will be a main force for stability, because one of the vulnerability of the society is if the army is so weak and unprofessional, it's become a militia, then cause all the problem. But this army is becoming stronger and stronger. Hopefully they will play a vital role in the stabilization of the country. And international development. If we wisely use international development assistance, that will contribute to the nation building in Afghanistan, especially if we use it wisely as a balanced with the means to develop all parts of Afghanistan, and we should not ignore or isolate any part, any tribes, any backward areas. That will contribute to the nation building and sustainable peace in Afghanistan. The list is going on and on. I don't want to take your time to discuss all those things. What is our role? It's this independent directorate is created by the president last year, and he gave us a very clear mandate. Our mandate is coming from Article 138 of Constitutions, which states that Afghanistan should preserve the principle of centralism, but also in the same article it mentioned that to enhance and also to expedite the social and economical development, that we have to delegate a lot of authorities to the provinces, that we have to move the decision making as close as possible to those communities which these decisions affect their lives. So that is a very good combination of the central systems combined with the participatory approach which is predicted in the constitutions. Also, the president vision for subnational governance is, I will summarize in three areas. One, he's keen on bringing the elements of a good governance, like transparency, accountability, and responsiveness of the government. The second is that strengthening the representative bodies in the national, subnational level, that we have to make sure that people are participate actively in those decisions which affect their lives. That is, and also working with the community, tribes, with ethnic groups, with wider society to bring them in the mainstream, to reconnect them with the government, and with the partnership of the government and the people of Afghanistan, we have to bring the differences and enhance the legitimacy of the Afghan state and the eyes of ordinary people. And we think that the legitimacy of this government is not only coming from our ballot boxes, which is very important for us, but also from ability of the government to bring security and peace, and also public services, delivery of public services. Peace for us is not means the absence of war, but also peace have a broad meaning for us. That peace means that we have to bring hope and optimism to the mind and the life of people. The people should be confident about their futures, about the future of their children. We have to bring food security, environmental security, and we have to bring job security and the physical security to the life and also the mind of people, that this is what we are talking about, the comprehensive strategy for bringing peace in the country. And this is how we develop our 5 years strategic plan, and based on that, now we are working on the, for the first time, on the sub-national policy. The main theme of the sub-national policy is empowering the communities to participate actively in decision-making at the sub-national level. And this is by moving the decision-making centers from Kabul to the provinces, and from the provinces to the districts, and from the district to the villages. And people should actively get involved in decision-making. That is a main tool for us, for a nation building in the long run, and also for sustainable peace and stability for the country. And also the democratic values to get roots in our society, because that we have to work very hard to make sure that the values we are believing in, the values are reflected in our constitutions, and gets it, its way to the villages and to the life and also to the mind of people. So about subnational activities, I will be very happy to respond your to respond to your questions. So I don't want to take your time. This is what I say to you. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for that introduction. I think what we'll do is open up for discussion, and let me ask you an initial question. This document, which is an executive summary of the draft subnational policy, lays out an extraordinarily ambitious agenda for creating structures of governance from the provincial level to the municipal level, the district level, and the village level. In the next 5 years or so. So the first question I have is, this requires, and there's a table in here that lays out the elections cycle. You identify some 36,000 villages in Afghanistan, each of which will have some form of local governance. In order to achieve that, you need to hold elections, you need to draw the district boundaries, and there is an election cycle in here that has 15 elections being held in each year from 2009 to 2026. So almost every year, a national elections being held at the local level. In as you say, 34 provinces, 364 districts, 36,000 villages, and several dozen municipalities. That seems like an enormous undertaking. So my question is that feasible and sustainable? Not even mentioning the security environment at the moment, but is carrying out a plan of that scale feasible and sustainable? And if it's not sustainable in the next couple of years, do you have a prioritization plan to figure out how to begin to implement that strategy?
Alex, can you put affordable on all those goals you had there?
Affordable?
Sustainable.
Sustainable combined with affordable, yeah.
First, this policy is not the policy that we have created ourselves. We went with a very open mind to a national debate, to discussing with the different stakeholders, like ministries, and our own staff members, like governors, district governors, ordinary citizens. So we start negotiations. What will be the next subnational policy? To a national debate, to what the people of Afghanistan want, what kind of subnational governance they want. And we divided in four categories, like municipalities, role and responsibility, authority of the governors and district governors, and fiscal responsibilities and authority. So this is the formed based not on our own idea. This is what we get from the different stakeholders, especially the citizens of Afghanistan. Still, we are working on this one. Some of these things mentioned is this constitutional mandate. There's a sixth different election should be completed in the coming 2-3 years. The first is next year presidential election, which does not relate to us. and National Assembly elections, which does not relate to us. But the rest, like provincial elections, district elections, village elections, and also the municipalities elections, is should be under the Independent Election Commission. But these people are, these representing body is subnational. We are responsible to provide them with the capacity development services, with logistical support, and make sure with the appropriate training that they can actively play the role. So these are constitutional mandate, we have to do it. But we know that we are working now with the Independent Election Commissions. We have a plan. Now we submitted our plan to the Independent Election Commission that they should come now with a reply that they have a capacity to have this election or not. The capacity in the subnational is a very big challenge for us because we are assigning the subnational's governance to the jobs which they never done it before. They never had a district council. You said the village council will be 300,000 people will be represented. 300,000 people will be the members of the village council all over Afghanistan. How many in the district? 6,000 or something?
Altogether, it's 300,000.
Altogether, 300,000. So this 300,000 is a large number of people.
So 300,000 people elected at the village, district, and provincial level.
Okay. Like 400 in the provincial level, maybe it's about 2,000 in the district level, and majority of in the village level. So this is what we, okay, how to provide technical assistance, logistical support, training, and capacity development service is a big challenge. Now we are planning, for example, we are having a workshop next month with the five institutes in India. That these institutes are coming to Kabul, we are discussing a very ambitious capacity development program. They are panchayats, they have a lot of capacity, they have a lot of training capacity. So they are coming to discuss with us to draw 5 years institutional development program for the representative bodies in Afghanistan. For us, the provincial council, district council, and village councils. So they will help us in five training of the trainers, equip the resource centers. We have at training centers in regional basis. Like we cannot bring 300,000 people in Kabul, or maybe so that we have a India has a, even in the district level they have that kind of mechanism. But we said, okay, now we are in the coming 5 years, we have to maybe extend it to the provincial, regional, and also in the provincial level. So we are getting some external assistance to make sure that that capacity we enhance. We should have enhanced capacity in the short term, external enhanced capacity, but in long term that we have to train, we create that kind of capacity for representative bodies. But I understand that it's not a, you know, an easy job. We need technical assistance, we need financial assistance, and we need other supports, external and internal. But we don't have any option because that is the mandate by the Constitution. We have to implement it. The Constitution is already mentioned that we should have these representative bodies. But if once it is created, I think that will be a very good tool that people can actively participate in the decision-making in the local level. The policy will define the role and responsibilities of these councils and how what they should do. And through the subnational legislation, we will make it legal that how much power and how much decision-making power will have in this institution. But capacity is a big problem now. And we are working very, we have a very ambitious big plan for institutional development for IDG headquarters, also for the provinces and for the representative bodies. Hopefully that they will train all of, the India agreed to train all of our provincial council members to India for the short term. In the long term that they will create a training center in Kabul, a resource center with a strong training elements that we can do it because every 4 years, they will be changed. Every 3 years, the district council will be changed, new generations, so that we should have that capacity. We are working very hard, but remain a big challenge for us.
And is there any geographic priority in how you plan to roll this out? Have you identified particular provinces or levels within there to roll out the strategy?
This is what we have to decide on the next month workshop. that what will be our plan for strengthening the representation in these representative bodies. For example, now we are focusing on provincial council. In 2010, there will be like district councils. And after that, that will be... So we have our time, so we will focus now on the provincial council. We will work very hard to create capacity then to train the districts and the village council. But we don't have...
Okay, so we will go and start questions. Please identify yourself and your institution as you ask the question.
William Maddy from the Australian National University. One of the questions that comes to mind immediately when one talks about diversified systems of governments is where the money is going to come from at the local level to support decision making, because the experience in a range of diversified systems is that one problem that can arise very quickly is that of vertical fiscal imbalance, when the resources that are available simply don't match the responsibilities that have been given to particular bodies. And that would seem to me to be a risk in Afghanistan, where there are a lot of competitors at the central level for relatively scarce internal revenue sources, putting aside things like the salary bill of the Afghan National Army, which could absorb virtually the entire revenue stream of the state as it exists at the moment. And if one then becomes dependent upon donor funding to sustain activities at the local level, how does one go about overcoming the problem that the donors will have priorities of their own that they will want to impose that can then interfere with the legitimacy of local bodies seeking to implement policies of their own?
These are very valid and very good questions. I'm a development worker myself. Mr. Fahim in Prajwak knows that I was working the development. I was a development worker for 20 years of as a head of NGO, working in the very remote areas. The sustainability of these programs always is a matter of concerns for the government and for at least for a lot of friends in the government of Afghanistan. We are dependent heavily on the foreign assistance. But okay, I will come later to that. The first thing is that we have a mechanism now exist in Afghanistan that will distribute a lot of resources to the local structures. We call it CDCs, these community development centers. These community centers created by, supported by the government of Afghanistan, these people will decide about the development projects, and the government that assigned a large amount of money to the CDCs, which 23,000 of the CDCs already exist in Afghanistan. And we find it very useful too. And when I went to India, I found it out that Indian panchayats are not working better than our CDCs, and they said we have to learn because our CDCs were able to more generate more local resources than these Indian panchayats. So that two things: that if you bring organizations to in the local level, that we can generate a lot of resources, but these resources should be supplemented by government or external resources to in the short terms. For the districts and the village level, what we see that one of the good tools that we have to give resources or to assign resources to the centers is to the PDPs, the provincial development plans, we call it. These provincial development plans is usually suggested by the ordinary citizens. Once these representative bodies in the village level exist, they can suggest these PDPs. And then when it is approved by the district councils and the provincial councils, that become integral part of the ministry's work plan to implement those projects. So those projects which is suggested by these communities will be obviously now, at the moment, now we put 1,500 of these projects to the different ministerial plan for this year. But in the future, what we want that this plan should be approved by the district councils and the provincial councils, and the decisions regarding implementation and local resources should be made in the provinces. And every province should be able to make their own budget and their own plan. And that plan and budget should be part of the national budget and national plan. So that we have to move a lot of this decision making to the provinces and the districts, and we have to also allocate development funds to the provinces, the districts that will go to the villages. So in that way that we can prevent the tendency of money spent or controlled by the center. And the subnational policy will clarify and deal with all these issues and and also lay out a process how these projects and activities are initiated and how it is approved and how it is funded, and to make sure that the central government does not control everything, and usually that's the tendency. But the sustainability is that, yes, this government is 100% now dependent for the development assistance on internet, but we are also working very hard to make sure that we generate local revenue by direct taxations, by customs, by also we are awarding big contracts for minerals and mines, which is, again, that's maybe create some questions. And there's a prospect of that the country will, in 5 to 10 years, will be able to take most of their generate revenue, the domestic revenue, will take their basic needs.
Deborah Alexander, I'm with the U.S. Joint Forces Command, and I worked at the U.S. Embassy for about 4 years in Kabul. You mentioned the draft plan. I'm interested in the governance plan. Is it dependent on the election of the municipal and district councils? And if so, when will those elections be for those municipal and district councils? And then you also mentioned the CDCs, and in your governance strategy, how do you see the CDCs, okay, the provincial councils, mm-hmm, the shuras, and these other community structures, what role will they play in your local governance strategy?
The provincial council is planned with the presidential elections together, that the election will be held. And the district council will be held together with the next National Assembly elections. And we haven't planned for the village councils, which is very big, and we have to work very hard with the election commission to have that election. So by 2011, we want to have complete all these elections. Also, in 2010, we are planning for municipal elections, so that will be completed. But for the village, we don't know that. We have to decide with the election commission about it. CDCs, we see a CDC as a very important civil society organization, which is, I know the importance of the CDC, and because CDCs is created with the external assistance, like Ministry of MRRD with the external financial assistance, that these CDCs need further assistance and protections and to come up to the level of mature civil society organization that they can continue by itself. Till that time, we need to protect the CDCs. Because why the CDCs is important? Because if you have very active civil society organization, 23,000, but I think the target is 32,000 together, then if we protect them, if they are very active, we can use them for lobbying. The civil society organization can network among themselves. They can influence the government policies, create pressures, and do lobbying, and take active role in the elections that make sure that people are sending the right representatives to the village and also district and province and also to the national assemblies. So these are very important for us, that to protect them and create an environment that they become mature civil society organizations. They are not representative bodies, legal representative bodies, but they are civil society organizations. But they need our attentions for some time to become more. Because the reason they are created with external assistance, so that they are very fragile if immediately we withdraw the assistance from them. So let them to grow and become more stronger civil society organization with training, with protections. What I see protection, how we protect CDCs, is that We have to avoid, the government of Afghanistan at least avoid parallel structures, because now in the village we have already CDCs, but we should not allow Ministry of Education to go and create education committee in the same village, and not like Ministry of Women to create a woman council or jirga in the same village. So we should do a lot of things through the CDCs in the village level to make sure that we are not duplicating our activities. But we have to keep their independence, that they should be legal entity, that they can enter into contracts with other bodies, and they become a very active civil society organization to influence the government policies.
Just following up on the CDC question, I know that there's been some discussion in Kabul. I mean, there have been millions and millions of dollars invested in creating CDCs, which are essentially elected organizations at the village level, which sound, at least by the description that you give, very similar to the village councils. Mm-hmm. So why not just make the CDCs into the village councils? Why create a separate mechanism?
We don't have any problem, but the law of the country is any election which is not under the direct supervision of the election commissions, anybody created, like if tomorrow we have 20 people, they come and represent among themselves a committee, that's a representing body of these people, but not a legal, they cannot do the legal representation of the country, maybe of the village. So any election which is not done under the direct supervision of the Independent Election Commission, we cannot call him legally the representative bodies. But if the village councils are really representative people, they become automatically the village councils also when doing the election, people will elect the same people. Sometimes we are afraid that might be the CDCs are different type of people. CDCs are the community development centers, the people which was interested, maybe somebody on the political level is not interested to sit in the CDCs, mm-hmm. but when there's election for village councils, that guy is going to sit and run for that kind of positions. But everybody is not interested to sit in the development CDCs, so that they legally cannot represent people, but in actual fact, that will be a big tools in CDC. If they're active, they can simply go. Also, that I have to tell you, the CDCs are on a different level now. The CDCs is functioning very well, well representative, like women are representative there. These are the CDCs in the central part of Afghanistan. In southern part of Afghanistan, the quality of CDCs is very low, because of the war and conflicts and a lot of other issues going on there. So we cannot make these representative bodies, which we are not sure about the quality of these CDCs. But it's different from one village to another village, one district to another, and one province to another.
In the back there.
Yeah, hi, I'm Ann Richard, the International Rescue Committee. And I understand that my colleagues in Afghanistan, in addition to doing health projects and education projects and helping refugees return, are involved in the National Solidarity Program, which gets funded from the Ministry of Rural Infrastructure and Development, which gets money from the trust fund set up by the government, and then ends up through this program fostering CDCs at the local level. I think I've got that all right.
Yes.
So I was going to ask earlier, but I think you've answered some of this, you know, how the National Solidarity Program relates to what you're trying to do. But it sounds like the CDCs are very much something that you're hoping to flourish and that you can encourage to happen. The problem we're having right now, of course, is the deteriorating security situation makes it harder and harder to work in places where we have been working for the last few years. Related to that, I think, is the sense of, you know, whether non-governmental organizations, even ones like ours, where 99% of the staff are Afghan, are impartial and perceived as impartial or not, because we were really getting our protection from being from Afghanistan, having Afghans. So I think it's going to be harder and harder to run these kind of programs if we can't move around and take it out to villages like you have. And it's interesting because another NGO that works more in the South was explaining in a briefing to Congress that they don't want to be part of this national solidarity program because they don't want to be seen as supporting the central government, the partisan government. So, and whereas I've been talking a lot about how the NSP is part of the solution. So I wanted to ask you, you know, from my vantage point here in Washington, what are the key messages I should be taking when I talk to Congress and when I talk to the administration about working at this and trying to do something constructive? What would you hope are the things that I'm talking about and emphasizing?
Your question was specific about the CDCs, but the last part of it is maybe general. You want Mia to deliver a general.
One was that, you know, we saw this National Solidarity Program as a very positive thing, and I think it fits into what you're talking
yes,
about.
Yes, sir.
Second, that security is deteriorating, which is making it much harder for us to continue working. And third, as we cope with all of this, what should we be telling people in Congress?
Okay. That my main message is that we cannot bring security if we increase the police and national forces, that's Afghan National Army, and this is very vital, important for stability of the country in short and long term. But the peace is, we can bring peace through better governance in Afghanistan, in subnational governance. That means that we have to win the mind and also the heart of people that to we have to end the indifference of the community regarding the present government. There's a gap created, and that the Taliban and Al-Qaeda exploited that gap and caused us a lot of security problem, which threatened a lot of our good programs like this National Solidarity Program. We would have been in very advanced stages in a lot of these provinces if there was a security. So for 6 years we ignored the subnationals, because in those days the assumptions were if we the Taliban is defeated, if we support the national institutions, political and sectarian, and we support them with the development work, what happens that the problem will be disappeared. We forget the people's factors, especially in the district village, in the district and provincial level. So that is, we created a gap between the people and community, and it caused a lot of indifferences. So that indifference is exploited by Taliban and Al-Qaeda and caused us security. So my big message is that we have to revive the informal social contracts which was existed before the war between the government and the people of Afghanistan. The people was also felt responsible to take care of security and many other issues, and there were a systematic interaction of the communities with the people. So that informal social contract should be revived. It is like our independent directorate, we have a plan, and also we have a strategy how to revive that, but which need the integrated approach of all different ministries and all government machinery, and plus the support of international community. How to? Otherwise, the increase in the forces are good, but we cannot bring security and the present situation of Afghanistan, because we are facing different kind of enemy. The enemy is creating a lot of fear and among the ordinary people that created indifference. Because what is happening now, in the moment of Afghanistan, the people, the Taliban, when say something, they do it. For example, if we capture somebody working with the government, we will kill them. They will do that. When we say that we are going to protect them, we are not protecting them. So that caused us indifference among the ordinary population, despite the fact that 90% of the people, they hate Taliban, they don't want Taliban, they want this government to be strong, but they are not supporting us actively, because we ignored the subnationals in the past 6 years, and we were not reaching the government didn't have anything in the life and also in the mind of people. So we have to strengthen the subnational government to make sure that we regain the confidence of the people, ordinary citizens, and the indifferences existing among the ordinary citizens in the village toward the government. So this is my main message.
Ken?
Thank you. Jeff Katzman, the Commissioner of Citizens for the Congress. Unfortunately, the press has convinced my bosses in Congress that the Afghan effort is on the verge of some collapse, so it's failing. I happen to disagree with it. I think many in this room disagree with that. But part of the problem has been corruption and inefficiency at the provincial level and local level. And the press and some statements indicated that you're director and that you were sort of a key person in trying to redress some of these problems. And that your director is reviewing governorships, district security officials. Can you talk a little about what your director does in terms of replacing?
Okay. Yeah, that's a good question. That the first thing that we decided to make sure that we replace or reappoint better governors. And we appoint governors based on four criteria. First, that should be loyal to the constitution of Afghanistan. The second, better management and leadership skills. The third is that ability to interact efficiently with the people. The fourth is that to interact efficiently with the international community to make sure that to mobilize resources for the reconstruction and development of the provinces. Five, he should be free of their allegations, strong allegations, like if it's corrupt or it's more part of mafia or drug mafia. Then we appointed, based on this criteria, new governors. And about 12 of these governors, which was our priority list, was removed in the new appointments based on this criteria. Like the governor of Konar was a very active guy. Previously, he was a warlord, but we appointed Mr. Wahidi, the governor of Konar. He's a very active development, community development worker, before head of INGO and all these other things. Like Mr. Mash'al, we appointed as a governor of highly educated, well-connected with the community, governor for Lagman. We appointed Mr. Fedai, highly educated, well connected with the people, and satisfy all these five criteria as a governor of Wardak Maidan, and again Ghazni in Kandahar. We moved a lot of strong governors, which thanks to the president that support the IDLG and the IDLG decisions that we managed to move, like Governor of Kandahar, Governor of Helmand, Mr. Asadullah Wafai, if somebody is familiar with that, Governor of Farah and Baghlan, and these are. So we moved all these governors, and now there's acknowledgement that these new governors are doing much, much better. But we still have a lot of problem in the district level, because the district 360 districts we have, that we have to now we ask, we have a plan to review all the district governors from next month, that we will review at the times 50 district governors, and we decide about to leave him on the job or change him. But now there's an independent panel, appointment panel created in Kabul, that we will send all the potential candidates to the panel, and they will interview and they will see which one is good, or they can refuse, or they can suggest one name to the president for the final signature for the governors, for deputy governors, and also for district governors. So we've made a lot of changes there, but still we have a lot of job ahead in the district level.
Just a free follow-up. What do you say about you know what the press is saying here about the Afghan? What is your comment? I mean, what would you
About the corruptions?
No, just the general deterioration of the whole effort.
In those areas which we paid attention, we made a lot of advance. And after the collapse of Taliban, we see that there was a determination to reconstruct or support the national institutions. The national institution was stronger than ever. Like Ministry of Agriculture, the education is as of Afghan leadership, it's very efficient and effective in making a big difference. 6 million people are going to school. Ministry of Rural Development is a very efficient, Afghan-led, and supported by international partners, is doing very well. Ministry of Public Health, in the 6 years, the health coverage is gone from 9% to 90%. So that's a very big achievement. This is purely Afghan-led process. When we provided opportunity for Afghans and we support them, that there's a big difference. But in those areas which we purposely or unintentionally neglected, that is much behind. The ministries and also like subnational, for the six continuous years, we neglected the importance of the subnationals. And so that is left behind. And now, after 6 years, last year, we created independent director of local governance to improve. And again, that if we provide opportunity for this departments, that could be, we could see a drastic change in this one.
Let me just follow up on the appointments question. The advisory panel on presidential appointments was created, I think, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
It's not functioning. I think you just mentioned that it's going to start functioning. I wonder if you can say something about why it has not been put in place. And the second question is that in looking at the strategy, particularly for provincial governors, but also for district governors, you mentioned something about the selection process. There's no mention about consulting the provinces in the selection of the governors. And I wonder if you could say something about what the role, if any, should be of selecting the local population or consulting the local populations in the selection of the okay. provincial and district governors.
According to the law, the governors should be appointed by the president. But before appointing that, there was informal discussion going on or finding out which is acceptable or not acceptable. You will ask me why the governor is not elected or selected by the provincial council, for example. But we don't have a federal system. That became a federal system. Why we don't have a federal system? There's a political, social, and economical realities in Afghanistan that we are not in that stage to go to that level of decentralization, because we are still a very fragile situation state, and we have a hostile countries around us, and usually that we need time, a lot of time. So what our constitutional those people which made the constitutions, they can appoint two things: the central system, which is appoint the president will appoint the governor and the district governors, but make it more representative by putting the provincial council, district council, and village council. We combine these two ideas. So, but in the policy, what we are going to do that we make the governor more responsible to the provincial council. Now there's no responsibility. So the governor, the provincial council can ask the governor and ask him any questions, and they ask for explanations. If there's any genuine complaint, they can make it. But we are not in that stage that to go to that level of decentralization because of our a lot of vulnerability, political and social and economic vulnerability we have in Afghanistan right now. But that's an ideal situation, but we are far away from that situation. But informal discussion is going place. We know that which one is will be acceptable by the population, which is not acceptable, but this is not a very systematic way.
And the appointments panel, it's not functioning
yet? It's functioning again, and all the appointments from my department go to that one. The reason it was not functioning before, the process was so slow that for appointment of a district governor, you have to wait 6 months, or a governor to have to wait 2 months. But we need a district governor next day because of we cannot keep the chair. So now we changed the criteria. They cannot wait till 15 days. For a district governor and 1 month for a governor, this kind of things, that we put some condition on the panel. Then we divide it again.
Dan?
I'm a little bit unclear how you're going to handle questions like who's eligible and who's ineligible to run for these councils. I mean, my picture of Afghanistan today is that you have lots of people in these communities who may not be loyal to the central government, who may be warlords, who may be drug kingpins, who may be Taliban. How are you going to, are you going to use this process to bring them in, or are you going to try to shut them out?
one is a political opponent of the for example, the president. That is not, this is the democratic country now. We have a very democratic constitution. Everybody can participate if they are happy with the government. Maybe the different political parties. We are hoping that strong political parties will emerge in Afghanistan. That because we cannot run the democratic system without strong political parties. But in the present, we don't have. But few things that if a Taliban, a previous Taliban, wants to have a civil life and they are loyal to the constitution of Afghanistan, they want to be part of systems, he's most welcome. But if a drug dealer is going to come, according to the law, that guy should be put behind the bar. So that's these are criminals. The criminals are a different matter. But again, according to the law, unless that the court of Afghanistan decided who's criminal, who's not criminal, we cannot do it our own, use our own judgments. But these democratic elected representative bodies are a very good tools for the nation buildings and bringing people together and to participate in the political, social, and economic life, that we have to use it. But the criteria is very clear that how, what would be the age and what will be the, for example, that if somebody is committed, a convicted criminal, he cannot be the part of that one, the provincial council. But the Taliban, yes, if the Taliban is not happy with the constitution, he wants to, loyal to the constitution, he wants to live in Afghanistan in peace and harmony, why not? Or anybody else. But the same rule is everywhere in every country.
So will you have a vetting process of some sort?
This is election independent commission should do it. We're already doing it. They did it for presidential, in the last presidential candidate election, and also in the provincial national assembly, they did the same things. And for the Loi Jirga, they disqualify some people because of they committed atrocities on the people of this country. That's up to them, and we don't have to do anything with that. The government, the Independent Election Commission should make sure.
Tony?
How much time we have?
5 minutes.
5 minutes.
Yeah.
Mm.
Five minutes, yeah. It's 3:20. 3:15, we have another appointment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll make it a short question. I've read reports that say the Taliban have shadow governments in some portions of the country. You laid out a 5-year plan, but you also talked about things that you're doing right now, because we need a district governor right now. We need effective governance right now. We want to use the CDCs because they're at capacity right now. So if you could talk about what kinds of things that you would advise or what you're doing right now that the international community could assist with right now, particularly as they interact in provinces and districts as part of PITs. So what is the right now things that you're doing?
There's the existence of Taliban in some areas. They're not big in numbers. They're very small groups. But the tools and they're using it is very different. They kill people, they hang people, they shoot people, and they create a lot of fear among the villages. So this is what I see a remedy for that, that with a good governance and good intelligence, we can take care of that. One message we have is that that the international community should listen more to Afghans. When we discuss about working with reconnecting the tribes or communities to the government, and suddenly they become suspicious that we are creating militias, armed militias. This is not the case. This has not been the case in the past 100 years in Afghanistan. That these are the systems, the traditional systems work efficiently and effectively. I do not say that the tribal system is the best system. But now we don't have any other options. Because we have to work through these systems, we have to make sure that bring security to the communities and to the life and also to the mind of people. So one thing is I'm very clear about that if the international community listens more to Afghans and trust them, and we have a proved record that when they trust them, they saw a big drastic improvement, like I saw, gave you the Ministry of Education or Health and MRRD. So then you will see a big difference. My government was trying very much from the beginning that, okay, that these tribes in connectivity with the people, with the communities, is the most important. It was ignored. And just recently acknowledged, okay, that there was a big mistake that we have done. But we lost a lot of opportunities. We lost a lot of time, which was very essential for us and cost us now. So this is the big thing, sir. This is, I think that you say that basically. Did I answer your question?
I think those steps on reconnecting with the communities that you would have people support NAM, if you can list a couple of those that would be useful to do.
This is Afghanistan Social Outreach Program. Afghanistan Social Outreach Program is a program that will be implemented at the district levels, will empower the district governors to have better connectivity, and for the local community of better organization. Through that organization, they should be able to resist Taliban, and also to have a better channel for the local grievances, local ordinary citizen grievances to the district level and to the provincial level. That we have also another program, we call it Border Districts Community Outreach Programs, that will be implemented in the districts along the border with Pakistan and Iran, that will organize communities to stop infiltration of Taliban and Al-Qaeda, and now they have a safe passage from those districts, that we want to work with those communities to make it difficult for them to deserve. The highway security, mobilizing the communities around that highway security, that they should take care of the security of the highway, which is very, again, it's very important elements for bringing securities. These are, in the long run, these councils and village and districts and the provincial councils will be very instrumental. These are the transitional arrangement that we are planning, and I'm lobbying in here in Washington, D.C. since a few days for those programs.
Do you have time for one more question?
One more question.
All right, I'm going to trick you. I'm a very quick question from our two distinguished guests. We have General Nicholson here and Fahim Akeem. If you just very quickly give your questions, and then we'll let you say your final words.
Yes, sir. Sir, what can ISAF do to help you implement this?
And let Fahim ask this question, and you can give her a combined response.
I can answer that. Afghanistan, it's very normal to see this pendulum change, going forward, going backward, but sometimes it's controversial to identify which way are you going. I'm very much interested to know about this revival of social contract, since it's been through a very diversified pattern since King Zahid. So which version do you prefer, since the UN common strategy preventing the majority of preventing the Taliban? It was another path that was following. So which modified version do you prefer?
So maybe this is neither very good discussing about, but you about the ISAF first, that the ISAF, the PRT role is very important for subnational development. We have to align PRTs with the government priorities. We have to bring some changes to the PRT activities to make it more relevant to the province needs, to the Afghan government. And the PRT, because it's the only tool which the governor has for institutional development and also reaching the communities, but we can make the PRTs more efficient and effective in the provinces. So that's a very big debate now we have. Maybe in some other times we can discuss. Okay. Regarding the past 30 years of war, there's a lot of changes in Afghan society. That artificial leadership was created, and by the external forces, by internal mechanisms, and disturbed some of our traditional mechanisms. But when there's a peacetime, usually the traditional and the more genuine leaderships reemerge in Afghanistan. I was a witness in the the first few years of the Karzai administration, when there was a peace in most parts of Afghanistan, the traditional leadership was re-emerging. And also the warlords, drug dealers, artificial leadership was created by ISI, by external assistance during the war, was losing its power and grips on the people. But the social contract is that we have to work again with the traditional, non-controversial leadership in different parts of the Afghanistan to make it strong, and those are the people that can make differences. And for that, we have needs some peace and stability in Afghanistan, and very well-focused activity that makes sure that we are not creating any new artificial leadership in the country, which causes continuously.
Well, I want to thank Mr. Popal again for coming to see us. I think that what you see here at the Institute and around the table are really a community that is genuinely concerned about our shared future. Afghanistan and the United States have a shared future, and you are leading one of the critical elements of making that future into a positive reality. And we wish you the best of luck and success, and we also hope that whatever we can do at the U.S. Institute of Peace and the other institutions here to support you, that you'll call on us to do that. Yesterday, we had the launch for a report of the Pakistan Policy Working Group that I, USIP, was involved in, as well as some of the other members here, which is about some of the key ways in which we think the United States needs to reformulate its policy with Pakistan as well, which obviously affects you. So
yes, right.
I hope you'll take that back to Kabul with you or read it on the plane.
I'm definitely reading it on the plane, I think.
Yeah. And welcome again. Thanks for coming.
Okay. I want to thank you and all the participants. Thank you very much.